The S&P 500 closed flat Wednesday. Stocks initially extended their losses after the Federal Reserve cut interest rates by a quarter percentage point, but recovered after Chairman Jerome Powell said he was not ruling out further rate cuts. The Nasdaq closed lower, and investors were left with a bad taste in their mouths following results from Chewy. Shares fell after the online pet food retailer's quarterly loss widened more than analysts expected. The stock has plummeted since the company went public in June.
The Trump administration on Wednesday announced plans to revoke a California rule requiring automakers build cleaner cars. The president tweeted that he was revoking California's federal waiver on emissions in order to produce far less expensive cars for the consumer. The move will set off a massive legal battle between the state and the federal government. California has for decades received a federal waiver granting the state the right to set emission standards higher than the rest of the nation. And in doing so, the most populous state in the U.S. wields enormous power in the sorts of cars that get built for American consumers.
If you're a woman in Iran, match days means heading to your local shopping mall to catch the game. They're forced to follow their national soccer team outside the stadium. The ban on them entering football stadiums for men's soccer matches has once again been thrust into the spotlight. Iran is under pressure from soccer's governing body, FIFA, to change its stance, and it may be starting to work.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's September the 19th, and it's 5:11 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. As we get going here on another business day, lots going on in the world of business. We'll try to update as much of it as we can moving forward in the 5 o'clock hour this morning. We'll get to some of the market numbers momentarily, some of the big headlines of the day momentarily. But on the program today, it is Thought Leader Thursday. And we're going to do a refresher course on the Brexit controversy in Great Britain, Britain leaving the European Union. Our thought leader today, David Faller from Associated Bank, oversees global markets. He's also a former London resident. So we will catch you up on what's happening with Brexit. Lots of developments there. First off this morning, a little bit later in the program, we're going to try again to do a segment we had earlier this week. Had to postpone it about the fall apple picking scene is a little sparse in some places because of weather this year. Alexia Elahalde Ruiz will be with us. She's a food reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Alexia has been covering this from a number of different angles, and you might be surprised at how many apple orchards are calling things off, actually, this fall because they just don't have the stock in place. That'll be, again, about 5:38 this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk with futures pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street. A little weakness this morning. Dow futures are off 54 points, nearly a quarter of a percent. S&P futures are off nearly a quarter of a percent as well. NASDAQ futures are off nearly a third. As we look around the rest of the world, markets in Europe generally higher, all of them in the green this morning. The FTSE up by nearly a third in London, in Germany up by nearly a quarter of a percent, in France by nearly a half a percent. Mixed day in Asia, the Nikkei is going to end the day up nearly a third, about 83 points. In Hong Kong, markets off nearly 285 points, a full percent. In China, up by nearly a half a percent. Oil in the United States is at $58.95 a barrel. Of course, one of the big stories this morning is the aftermath of the Federal Reserve decision yesterday to slice interest rates by a quarter of a percent. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell telling reporters that the action was taken as insurance against some ongoing threats. He cited investor uncertainty about U.S. trade policy and weak global growth. This morning, Tesla has won a top safety honor for its Model 3 sedan. The car earned high marks in all six Insurance Institute for Highway Safety crash tests. That's the first for the electric car maker. The only other electric car to earn the top award was the Audi e-tron. The chief researcher at the IIHS says the tests show that you don't have to give up safety if you want to drive an electric car. Honda is announcing its first hybrid SUV, and it's making quite a splash for fuel economy. The 2020 CR-V will get 50% better mileage than the gas-only version. It's also the first all-wheel vehicle to use two motors. One will power the back wheels, and drivers can stay in EV mode longer. The SUV goes on sale early next year. The automaker's other electric vehicle, the Honda E, will hit Europe by summer. And nearly two-thirds of the college class of 2018 graduated with more debt than 2017 graduates. The average bachelor's degree is leaving newly minted grads with more than $29,000 in student loan debt. That's a U.S. record. Let's begin front and center this morning with Britain's exit from the European Union. It looks like it's going to happen one way or the other, and sooner than later. So let's get an update, a Brexit refresher this morning from a former London resident and global markets expert in our thought leader conversation this morning. David Fowler, SVP of Capital Markets at Associated Bank, is with us. David, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here.
I want to begin by letting people get to know you a little bit. Tell us about what you do and how you're involved at Associated Bank.
I am a part of a group within the capital markets team that basically manages the risk that the bank has and our clients have to the market. We basically provide pricing to our advisors who talk to the clients. And then if transactions occur, we basically take those transactions and put them into the market and basically move the risk from our clients to the general market.
Global markets.
Across currencies, interest rates, and also commodity derivatives.
And so that kind of goes to our conversation today. We wanted to focus in on Brexit.
Yeah.
If you can't tell from David's voice, he has some background on this, some expertise. You lived in London for a long time.
I did. I lived in London for 7 years, and I come from Ireland originally, so we're kind of on the hot seat.
Right. So I'm going to ask the question. Everybody's is thinking, what in the heck is going on?
You know, you can't write this stuff. Yeah. It is just every day is one kind of more bizarre step to the next. But I think what we are getting to is a situation where the end is getting near. The European Union doesn't really want to see this extend beyond October 31st unless there's a really, really strong reason for doing so. The UK has said that they don't want to extend beyond October 31st. So now it really is a situation where we have to try to find how it's going to happen and is there a way that it can happen without being complete chaos, which a no-deal Brexit probably would bring.
When we last left all the players in this story, a law had just been passed that told the Prime Minister, no deal. You have to have a deal to go out of the European Union. He says he's not going to follow that law. How can that be?
Well, I think what he's doing is they've said that they will follow it to the letter of the law. As we all know, the letter of the law may be very different to the spirit of the law. One of the aspects that people look at right now is that if there, you know, is a deal, no deal, and is no deal, even more importantly, a deal. So if, for example, we have a situation where the government cannot negotiate anything different with the British government, with the European Union, I beg your pardon, between now and the 17th of October. One of the questions that comes up is, could the British government appoint someone to the European Council of Ministers, which they have not done, but they have a right to do? Could that person then go to that council meeting? And even if the other 27 members of the European Union were open to an extension, vote against it? That would be following the spirit of the law. To an extent, it would certainly be following the letter of the law. But it would also mean that Britain would be on a course for a no-deal Brexit, which is what the Conservative Party, as is government, state they want. And that, I think, is the big question for the rest of the European Union.
Is there a chance that Parliament may be able to stop some of this before it happens again? We heard this week the Supreme Court of the United Kingdom having a session talking about whether or not Boris Johnson may have lied to the Queen about some of this. Could the court step in and stop what we're seeing?
What the court is trying to do right now is to see whether they can basically stop this proroguing of Parliament. So for some of your listeners who may not be familiar with that term, it's quite common that when a new government comes in the UK, Parliament basically closes for a couple of days. And that's what proroguing is. And really what happens then is that any bill that hasn't been passed dies. And the government then basically has a chance to set out its priorities, which will be delivered by the Queen in a thing called the Queen's Speech. Normally, this proroguing lasts kind of a couple of days to a week. We haven't seen one that's lasted potentially lasting this long since Charles I. If Parliament can come back, and if the government loses at the Supreme Court, which we may know Friday or maybe early next week, then Parliament has a chance to do something. Right now, they have a chance to do nothing because there is no Parliament. And that's going to be the big hope for the kind of rebel alliance, so to speak, in the opposition, is that they can come back to Parliament and try to add more and more layers of complexity to the October 31st situation and tie Boris Johnson's hands even more in order to avoid them kind of slipping through and going through with a hard Brexit by default.
Yeah, and a side conflict of this story, a side bar story, if you will, is just the idea that Boris Johnson may have lied to the Queen about something.
Which is, this is huge. You know, it's particularly for a Conservative Prime Minister, for any Prime Minister, but for the Conservative Party in particular, because they are the royalists. And, you know, while people in, you know, lots of countries would look on the Queen as being, you know, a nice, you know, dear little, dear old lady who everybody loves, she's also the head of state. And it's a really important situation that the Privy Council, which is three members of the government, when they go to the Queen and tell her, this is what we think you should do, she has to be able to believe that they are giving her true and fair advice. And, you know, if it's shown that this wasn't the case, this is a constitutional crisis in a country that doesn't have a written constitution.
Yeah. So, and Boris Johnson could be out at that point.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. There's been so much said about whether or not Britain is ready for the exit from the European Union. One example, a story today, is that retailers are questioning whether or not there's going to be enough fresh food, fresh groceries.
Yeah.
If there's a hard exit, if there's a no deal Brexit, the government says, oh, yeah, don't worry, we have plenty of things stockpiled. There's going to be plenty of access. But the grocery industry there says, no, that's not true at all. The question of whether or not people are getting the real story about what's going to happen.
Well, as you know, last week a report was released, a report called Operation Yellowhammer, which had been kept kind of secret by the government. And this was the report that was written by the senior civil servants as to what would happen in a hard Brexit. And that was, the results of that were absolutely, you know, beyond scary. And we have to remember that in the UK, like in many countries, you know, supply chains are designed to work in, you know, kind of normal situations. So it's quite common for lettuce to be grown in northern Spain that will be in a supermarket in the UK in a day, like 24 hours, 36 hours later. They're expecting queues at Dover, which is one of the main import, which will become one of the main import ports. The queues there could be a week, could be a week and a half. They don't really know. They've talked about blocking off one of the main motorways and using it as a car park for trucks.
Yeah.
It's going to be, I think the trouble is that no one knows how bad this can be, because this is, it's like starting a new country. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a country that has no trade links with anybody. Has, you know, it will basically have to be self-sufficient probably for a month, maybe longer,
yeah,
until a lot of this stuff gets sorted out.
Investors in this country are watching this pretty closely as well. Talk to us a little bit about the exposure that investors here are facing and what the global repercussions might be of a hard exit and the problems that might ensue.
Well, I think you're going to see a couple, like right now, foreign direct investment into the UK is down because of uncertainty. And I think a hard Brexit will only increase that uncertainty. For people who have, like, it, there are, you know, if you're an overseas investor into the UK, certainly a lot of people are looking at asset prices being depressed and probably even more depressed after a hard Brexit when reflected back into their home currency. So if you were a US investor looking to buy assets in the UK, given where sterling dollar is right now at about 125, a hard Brexit, we could be looking at 110. You know, that's made those assets in dollar terms, you know, roughly 15% cheaper just because of that. So will there be some opportunities? Absolutely. And certainly I think there are a lot of people on the sidelines waiting for that. if everything goes, you know, smoothly and there is a deal, I think asset prices will remain a little bit offered, only because we still have, we don't have the kind of chaos uncertainty, but we still have quite a lot of uncertainty as to how the UK is going to basically move forward during the transition period into become what they're going to become. Are they going to become part of the common customs unit? Are they going to be completely independent? What's going to happen? And that will depend a lot. That will influence asset prices a lot.
I suppose the silver lining to this is that Britain was a country unto its own before the European Union, right? So they've done it before. They have that experience, hopefully, that maybe they could fall back on.
Although that was quite a long time. Yeah. You know, 1973 is a long time.
Lots has changed since then.
Lots have changed. Yeah. And, you know, it also, you know, one of the things they're looking at is trying to revive kind of the Commonwealth, which may or may not be a great idea, but people should remember that right now the half of UK exports go to the European Union. So where are you going to fill that hole? You know, because certainly the other 27 members are going to be looking to fill that hole mm-hmm. that Britain leaves. And, you know, and I would think there will be a significant amount of import substitution.
You mentioned the sidelines. Is that the play here? Is it? Do you think more people should stay on the sidelines on this?
I think, you know, if I was an exporter to the UK from the US, I would be adopting a situation where if I could lock in a reasonable margin with current exchange rates, I would certainly lock in half my risk. And I think I would wait to see what happens. And to be honest with you, if I was an importer, I would do exactly the same. Because in reality, for all of these people, you know, their focus, their expertise is in making or transacting in their product, not as foreign exchange traders. So, you know, I think the advice I give now is the advice I would always give. You know, if you can make your margin, certainly hedge half and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, David, while you're here today, I wanted to ask you, too, about the other big story, and that's the impact of what's happening in Saudi Arabia with the oil markets globally. It seems like it's settling down a little bit, but we've seen sort of a vulnerability that we thought perhaps would have been taken care of by Saudi Arabia protecting these oil fields. What's the global effects, after effects of what we've seen happen there?
Well, you know, as you say, on Saturday night, I went out and filled my car because I reckon, you know, gasoline prices are going up. And certainly on Sunday, it looked, you know, terrible. 5% of world supply is going to be offline for a while. And what we saw was by last night, you know, basically everything's back up. Mm-hmm. I think it showed two things, really. One is that no matter how protected countries have for these kind of very important installations, you know, they're still vulnerable. The supply of crude globally is much more diversified than it used to be. And particularly with the U.S. now being actually one of the largest, if not the largest producer of crude, for U.S. consumers, this would have been, I think, a little blip and you would have seen a little pain at the petrol pump. But after that, it would probably, within the next couple of weeks, it would have calmed down anyway. We've just seen that kind of calming down period shorten up. But overall, I think that crude oil is going to remain kind of in this kind of $50 to $70 range. There's not really that much around, I think, that's going to change that. Certainly, anytime there is a little kind of a perk up, we're going to see producers in the U.S., particularly frackers, coming in and trying to push out as much as they can.
And the unknown being what happens if there's some future conflict in that region.
Exactly. And that's always the unknown. But as I said, I think actually we're better off than we were in the past because there's greater diversity of supply. Yeah. And I think that's helping. But anytime a tanker is attacked, anytime a facility is attacked, we're going to see prices spike. It's just the gut reaction that we always get.
David, how can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one conversation if they want?
Well, I'm always available at our trading desk number at Associated Bank, and that number is 866-524-8836. Again, that's 866-524-8836. Or you could always email me at david.faller, and that's F-A-L-L-E-R, at associatedbank.com.
It was nice meeting you. A great conversation. Come back and see us again.
I'd love to.
David Fowler, a Senior Vice President, Capital Markets at Associated Bank. It's our Thought Leader conversation this morning. Remember, you can listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page and follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. Also, head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership. You can hear more conversations and meet more of our thought leaders there.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It is Thursday on The Opening Bell. Extreme weather this year has done a number on the apple crop at some orchards around the state and in other states as well, with some of them closing early or not opening at all. Alexia Elijalde Ruiz, food reporter at Chicago Tribune, is with us this morning to talk a little bit about this. Alexia, good morning. Welcome back to WGN.
Good morning. Thank you.
So the story focuses in on quite a few of the orchards. You did a nice check on all of them. Some of them have it worse than others. Who has it worse when you're reporting?
So they're kind of scattered around. It really depends on location. I focused on Woodstock area. There was an orchard there called Homestead Orchards, which did not close, but they're quite limited in their crop, and so they're not going to have any apples through October. They expect to run out by the end of September, which is unusual for them. But several of their neighbors closed. Woodstock Country, there are a few others, and I think there are like four in Woodstock and three of them, of the six total orchards in Woodstock, four of them are closed. So that area got hit by some of the worst weather. And then there's another one in Union that's going to see limited crop. But then there are others that are doing just fine. It really just depends on your location and how the particular weather systems affected each one.
Right. And it was different kinds of weather. Like, for instance, at Homestead, the trees that make the October apples never bloomed. But I know I'm seeing places where hail late in the year damaged apples, and there were other problems as well.
Exactly. Yeah, there was another orchard where, yeah, their big issue was that two hailstorms in one day in May, basically killed a bunch of their early their blossoms. And the reason that, you know, It was a series of unfortunate weather events because, it was so cold in the winter and then it was cool into the spring. And so that delayed the blossoming of the trees in many cases. And then when that hailstorm hit that particular orchard, you know, the blossoms had just started to open. And so it kind of got them. Whereas if it had been in a different stage, you know, a different year, that the hail might not have affected it.
Some of these orchards have other things that they do in the fall, but I know a lot of families, they plan their autumn around going to these orchards for a lot of different reasons, picking their own apples, a big one. But what is this going to mean to the bottom line at some of these orchards?
You know, no one I spoke with was super concerned. The ones that are closed, you know, probably have bigger concerns, but the ones with the limited crops said, you know what, this happens, we have bad years, this is just, you know, farmers are used to this kind of thing, we'll get through it. It's going to hurt because the U-Pick business is a huge part of their bottom line. Some of them do also have corn mazes and hay rides and, you know, all these other activities, but not all of them. Some of them are pure old-fashioned picking operations. So, it's going to hurt, but this is not catastrophic. You know, like, there's been a lot of concern about the corn and soybean farmers this year because of weather issues and trade issues. And when they talk, some of them talk in more kind of apocalyptic terms as far as the end of their business. The orchard owners didn't do that. They were just like, this is a bad year and we're going to get through it.
Talk to us a little bit then about the planning that will have to go on for consumers who will want to search out apples. What is the plan of action here? Do they, if they can't go to their orchard that's been closed, do they have to go out of state? And even then, are they going to find apples?
No, not at all. So people just need to check. You know, there's a long list of UPIC orchards in the state and nearby in Wisconsin and Indiana, and some of them are doing fine. You know, some of them have a perfectly great crop. So County Line Orchard, which is in Hobart, Indiana, just over the border, is doing just fine. Apple Holler, which is a very popular one just over the border in Wisconsin, is fine. And there are others in Illinois that also are good. So it's just a question of, you know, first of all, checking the website and calling your favorite orchard to see how they're doing. If they're not going to be right for you this year, you know, go on to the state's list and go down the list, and it'll be okay. There will be apple picking for all families that would like to do it. You just have to do your research and not just drive out there and assume that it's going to be you know, available for you, because that might be a disappointment.
Yeah, and so it also may mean you change your the flavor of apples that you want this year. I know your story talks a lot about the different varieties of apples that probably are not out. Let's go through some of that. I mean, so if you're maybe a Macintosh fan, do you switch to a Golden Delicious?
Right, exactly. I know nothing about apples until I wrote this story, and was fascinated to know that there were so many varieties, and they all ripen at different times of year, and that's what's determining, you know, which ones survived and which ones didn't, you know, which trees had the misfortune of being at the wrong stage of their development when the weather got mean. So Macintosh, I think last week at least was when Macintosh was being picked, and most of the farms, the orchards that were open, were picking those. But for example, the first, the Homestead Orchard that I led with, that's in Woodstock, you know, they don't have Jonagolds or Jonathans or I can't remember a few of the other ones that they're out of, but they do have quite a few Macintosh and you probably know the story, you know, that are available. So, yeah, it's just a question of changing the kind, the variety of apple that you might be getting. And, hey, that's a good opportunity to try something new.
You're absolutely right. So is there any concern, long-term concern here? I know year from year to year it's different, and farmers always go through this. But is there any concern that, for instance, with the later than normal warmth or the freeze that happens at an odd time, or some of these extreme hail events, are any of these farmers concerned about climate change moving forward and how that's impacting their business?
I don't think there's, you know, any doubt that some, you know, are concerned about what this means long term. You know, if you said that, you know, the weather's been weird for a few years now, and so yes, I think that there is some concern about that it's just going to get tougher. And, you know, they're concerned now about an early frost and what that could mean. It's, you know, that's a tough question.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, again, like, there are up and down years and they've gotten through them. But, yeah, I think that there's definitely concern that that the weather patterns have gotten, you know, more difficult. But they've also, you know, had good years in recent years, and so it is never know. It's every year is kind of a new surprise.
Absolutely, Alexia, we appreciate you being on this morning and sharing your reporting with us. Thank you.
Thank you so much,
Alexia Elejalde Ruiz, food reporter at the Chicago Tribune. We're going to link out to the story that she's been reporting on and apples, some extreme weather hurting apples across the area, in the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later this morning at WGNradio.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, as we look at world markets this morning in Europe, everything's in the green in London, France, and Germany. All higher, in some cases, by more than 0.5%. The trading day ending in Asia with mixed results, and futures in the U.S. pointing toward a weak open on Wall Street. Dow futures are off 74 points. Now a look at agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We begin this morning with a reminder for dairy farmers approaching a deadline. The deadline to sign up for the Dairy Margin Coverage Program rapidly approaching tomorrow, and fewer producers than anticipated have opted to enroll in dairy margin coverage. That's the 2018 Farm Bill's improved replacement for the margin protection program. And so if you're in the dairy farming business, you may want to catch that deadline tomorrow. On the dairy subject, Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont says his state has won a grant to create one of three regional dairy business innovation centers across the country. The other centers will be at the University of Wisconsin and the University of Tennessee. It's an ongoing series of meetings at the White House. President Trump today will meet with U.S. senators over biofuels policy, the ongoing war between big oil and big corn. And Senator Cassidy, representing the state of Louisiana, said he doesn't like what's being discussed. He said refineries employ thousands of energy workers in Louisiana, and increasing their compliance costs will put jobs in jeopardy. Meanwhile, Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa said he supported Trump's proposal to compensate for the exemption waivers granted by the EPA. That's the morning news. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of more stories before we leave you here this morning. A group of more than 500 major institutional investors is urging governments to do more to tackle climate change ahead of a UN summit on the issue next week. The banks, insurance companies, and pension funds warned today that the current national commitments won't meet the goal of the 2015 Paris Climate Accord. Signatories of the Paris Pact committed to keeping global warming well below 3.6 Fahrenheit, ideally aimed for an increase of no more than 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit by the century's end compared with pre-industrial times. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg will be in Washington today to meet with lawmakers and to talk about internet regulation. The company said in a statement yesterday that the meetings are not public, did not give details about who Zuckerberg is meeting with or exactly what will be discussed. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, September the 19th, the weekly look at first-time claims for unemployment benefits, leads off today's economic reports. Economists are forecasting 209,000 Americans filing for initial claims for jobless benefits. Existing home sales for August will be released as well today. Housing industry analysts expect to see existing home sales at an annual rate of 5.38 million last month. That would be down from 5.42 million in the last report. Also today, we'll get the Philadelphia Fed Business Outlook Survey. The leading indicators, the EIA Natural Gas Report, is due as well. And on the earnings calendar, Darden Restaurants reports this morning. Office furniture maker Steelcase will report after the closing bell today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, September the 19th.